Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson. It's Wednesday, the 16th of October, and this is Radio Edutalk. Tonight, missing is David Noble, my usual co-host. David's having to work tonight, but I am just very delighted to be joined by Charlie Love. Now, Charlie's been on before. I think we'll just get him to introduce himself anyway, because he's had a wee change or two recently. Can you maybe give us... I know you've had quite a lot of really interesting things, but you could just give us an overview of your path to where you are now and your current role and stuff like that, Charlie.
Sure, John. My background is that I've been a computing science teacher for the last 21 years and a principal teacher of computing science and computing studies for the last 17 or so. I've recently just changed roles and I'm now working for Aberdeen City Council as part of their learning technologies team. So that's rolling out a variety of technologies to schools, supporting schools from a learning and teaching perspective in how they use technologies. So that's a really exciting and interesting change. But along that path, that route, I've also been involved in the Consilarium project at Learning Teaching Scotland, then Education Scotland, working with Derek Robertson, Ollie Bray, Brian Clark and Brian McLaren on games-based learning and games design. I'm also involved with Computing at Schools Scotland, part of the organising committee for that organisation, about which is concerned with taking computing science education and really getting that embedded in both primary and secondary education experiences. And also, again, to support the computing community, I run an online site called CompEdNet, which is a computing science forum where people who are interested in computing science education from whatever their background can come in and join that community and share practice, share resources, discuss courses and assessment and so on. So all of those things have kind of led me to this point now, where I'm very much involved with computing science work, involved with technologies. And there's also part of the ICT Excellence Group that recently looked at where GLOW was going. And I was on your show before chatting about GLOW and how that's been moving forward. But tonight, I think we're going to have a chat about computing science.
Yeah, and maybe take computing science in all sorts of aspects. By the sound of it, Charlie, you're involved in an awful lot of different things, and maybe we'll just tease those out one by one. Before we start, can I just remind folk, if you want to ask Charlie a question, you can tweet. Just if you use the hashtag Edutalk, or tweet at John Johnson, it's probably easier, at Charlie_Love. We'll try and pick that up. If you would like to ask a question in person, you can DM me a Skype email and we'll try and pull you in to ask a question. Charlie, I'm quite interested to start with is it CompEdNet?
Yeah.
When did that start up?
Well, the computing science community in Scotland's had a really strong online presence since the implementation of Higher Still. Right about 1999, so that lets you know how long ago it was, myself, Bobby Elliott, and a number of others were Higher Still national development officers and national trainers. And as part of that work, we set up some online communities. And these were in things like Yahoo groups or One groups, as they were. And these were online places, online spaces where teachers could come, ask questions about new courses, discuss national support resources, discuss what they were doing with learning and teaching. And they were really, really popular. And we also spread the word about these groups through the national training events that we had at the time. And so these groups were very popular. And then we consolidated them, and they were put into a system called, I think it was eGroups, which then was then bought over by Orange. And then everything was going to be shut down. So what I did then, this is 2006, what I did then was, in my own server space, just set up a kind of community, And that community since 2006 has been growing and growing and going on, getting on, you're doing really well. And we've now got, I think we've probably got just about every computing science teacher in Scotland, mm-hmm. and several others, all part of the CompEdNet community. It's at compednet.com. And it's a community where you have to be, you're vetted to come in. So because we talk about assessment, and we talk about examination, and we talk about things to do with the second curriculum that are confidential sometimes, we do vet members to make sure that they're part of that community. But we have a number of primary school teachers that are also part of that community, as well as FE and HE professionals too. So there's quite a lot of activity there. So that CompEdNet community has been growing since 2006, and there are groups on there to do with the new national qualifications that are coming out for computing science, the existing qualifications, but also interesting things like there's an Edmodo user group and different groups for sort of broad general education, curriculum for excellence, and so on.
Right, and there's like an online forum and file sharing. Is that how?
Yes, it's basically what it is. It's an online set of discussion forums. The forums are specific to particular topic areas. Often they're organised by qualification or curricular level. So yeah. It might be CFE level 2, level 3, it might be national 5, higher. So the discussion areas are targeted on the different sort of levels normally. But within those areas, there's a space for file sharing, for resources to be shared. There's a kind of activity stream, just like you would find in kind of Facebook, where you can see what the contributions that different members have made to the community. But there's also, very interesting, there's also a kind of public blog that's kind of outwardly facing to share what's mm-hmm. happening in computing science education. So even if you don't want to join the community, you can still kind of subscribe to the blog and follow the blog to find out what's going on. And lots of information is shared there. So, for example, information about Nesta's one-day digital teachers edition, where Nesta are offering training to teachers for a day session. That was shared on there. Information about national qualifications will be there. There's information just now about getting involved in writing support resources and materials for Education Scotland. So there's lots of things that are relevant to technologies and computing science that go onto the blog there that people might find it interesting to follow.
Yeah, I'm of a primary background, and one of the things when I'm working now in North Lanarkshire, I don't see an awful lot of the secondary, but I do notice that the teachers, and especially in the computing department, across the different schools really have to work together because of the importance of putting courses and things together. Do you think there's a tendency to share things in secondary schools that you're exploiting there online and have been for a while, or do you think it would work equally well in primary schools?
I think it would work across the board. We've just all that we've tried to do with the CompEdNet space is make somewhere where people can make it their own. They can come in and set up their own groups and share things within share things with the community. We have local authority groups in there as well. So there's quite a number of the local authorities. Their computing teachers have got together and made spaces inside CompEdNet and are sharing things within their local authority. And I think there are primary teachers on CompEdNet, and that's something that we really want to encourage, a kind of a bigger input from primary teachers and getting primary teachers into the system to talk together and work together. I think if we want computing science education to develop and improve, when we look at we've got our curriculum for excellence, experiences and outcomes for computing science, and if we want those to become very positive experiences for young people, then we need to engage with primary professionals as well as secondary. So I think primary teachers very much welcome to come into that community and to make contributions, and also to take anything that's in the community that they think would be useful, to take that and use that, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there obviously is a couple of experiences and outcomes which directly target primary kids and primary teachers. In my experience, it's just now, last session, this session, that people are really beginning to take notice of that. Obviously in schools, in primary schools certainly, the focus would be on literacy, numeracy, and then, you know, starting through the social subjects, and an awful lot of the what would be touching on computing is ICT across the curriculum. But I think now people are really beginning to pick up on the, I can't remember the actual TC whatevers, but the ones where children have got to design things. And I know your work in the Consolarium, if I'm pronouncing it, Consolarium.
Potato, potato.
Yeah. But the work in the Consolarium was really spearheading that. And I wonder if it's missed now. I mean, it seems that when you were working there, that it almost, the idea of it hadn't penetrated. And now it's starting to get round far and wide in primary schools. It's really the time that support is needed.
Yeah. I think the Consolarium project was, I mean, it ran from 2007 really to 2011. Very much influenced by Derek Robertson and his work in games-based learning. And we got into, when I came on board in 2010, and with Brian Clark, we very much focused on developing games design as a context for, really a context for what would then become computational thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But really very much focused on trying to make technologies very straightforward, kind of demystifying technology, really. We worked with quite a number of primary schools setting up projects looking at things like Kodu and Scratch, which were really, I mean, they're really quite innovative pieces of software,
mm-hmm.
and spending time to show the primary teachers that these were not complicated pieces of kit, that really they were something they could very much pick up and just use. And I think we have a culture in our schools, and it's something that the Consolarium project was trying to break, with this culture that technologies are seen as difficult. You know, particularly I think there's sometimes a perception that in primary education, and I do apologize if I'm hugely overgeneralizing here, and I know I'm probably going to get slaughtered on Twitter for this.
We like overgeneralizations, yeah. That's cool.
But there is a perception, I think, sometimes that numeracy, literacy, we're great at. Social subjects, history and so on, we can do. And then when we begin to get into science education, and when we mm-hmm. begin to get into technology education, that is a step beyond sometimes the comfort zone of some of our teachers. And so there's a tendency to kind of not engage with that. And I think one of the things that the Consolarium Project very much tried to do was say, you know, you can engage with this. This is safe. You can come and look at technologies, you can see what it has to offer, and you can engage with that and use that in your classroom. And many teachers did, and they took that support and advice. And they also saw, I think a great number of teachers also saw the sorts of things that were on the Consolarium blog,
mm-hmm.
and the resources, the practical resources that we shared inside GLOW, where a teacher could take the learners in, they could see tutorial videos, suggested activities, and use those with their class, either in small groups, or if they had access to a computing suite for an hour or so, they could sit and they could work through those. So we'd very much try to say to teachers, no, this is something that you can totally do. This is not something that's hugely technical and hugely complicated. You can engage with it, you can pick it up, and there is support here for you to do that. So I think The constant learning project work was really important in terms of trying to establish that idea that technologies are accessible. You can use technologies and you can engage learners with them. I think, John, your point really is, you know, now is the point. We're probably, yet again, we were kind of ahead of the game with the Consilarium, because people were busy thinking about, you know, their kind of, what they saw as their core CFE delivery.
Yeah.
Now they're beginning to sort of come back to, oh, actually, how do we do that? Well, there's actually a lot of stuff already in GLOW and on the Education Scotland blogs that will really help and support them. So even though we were ahead of the curve quite a lot, I think there are a number of resources that are there for people to use and start to pick those things up with.
Yeah, well, that's comforting, I think, to know. I like this idea of using it as a context for learning. I was talking to a teacher locally at the end of last session, and I was actually recording what he was saying, because he'd been using Primary 3s and he'd been using Sketch Nation on the iPad.
Okay.
It's a very simple game-making application. And he talked for ages about, you know, they went to a local college and they met designers and they came back and they brainstormed and did that. And he got to the end and he'd finished, and I said to him, you actually haven't mentioned using this application. And he said, yeah, that was easy, and that was really not what the topic was about. It just got the kids interested, gave them purpose and focus, and gave them, you know, something that was a practical element. And I really thought that was very interesting, because, as I say, I was going into it as, you know, what are the affordances of this application and what good can it do? And his was really, well, it's just a wee part of this big learning journey the kids are on, which is to do with design and working together and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing that we've it's only in the last 2 or 3 years that we've begun to really think about it properly, but this whole idea of computational thinking, this having a way to look at the world that is something that's absolutely brand new over the last, it's kind of almost a once a millennium kind of way to look at things, because computational thinking is a brand new tool where you can merge this idea of kind of critical thinking skills, logic, abstraction, and so on, merge these together with the power of computers to understand and interpret the world around you. And computational thinking is a way of approaching problems and breaking them down into sort of looking at them in like as though they're sort of algorithms, as though they're kind of instructions and so on. And computational thinking is that skill that really is at the heart of kind of computing science, technologies, education. It's that way of breaking down problems into parts that are easier to solve, of being able to look at sets of data and understand them in particular ways. And if you're using whatever the context is, if you are delivering the skills of abstraction, algorithmic thinking, critical thinking, if you're doing those skills, if you're working on that with learners, whatever the application, you're serving them well. One of the things I'm very keen on is using games design as the context for delivering that kind of computational thinking. So we've got that in CFE. Our Curriculum for Excellence very clearly talks about games design at level 2 and level 3. And in fact, the new SQA qualifications also continue that theme of games design in the assessment and the activities and in the arrangements. So it follows through. Games design is a great way to start to get learners to think about instructions and conditions and how things work. One of the activities that I really like to do is sit with a kind of classic computer game with a bunch of learners and say, right, what are the rules here? And then that's quite an open-ended question. It's quite nice to set, you know, what are the rules in this game? And if you take something very simple like Space Invaders, I think most people will be familiar with Space Invaders. So you've got your rocket ship flies across the bottom, it hides behind the shields, and the invaders move from left to right, and they hit, when they hit the edge of the screen, something happens. Because when an invader hits the end of the screen, it moves down. So you get this kind of discussion happening in with your class, with your learners, and you're saying, so what are the rules here? And they take a bit of time to watch what happens in the game. It's easy enough to do. When I move left and right, my object moves left and right. The aliens seem to fire randomly and do fairly much fire randomly. But then for them to actually begin to analyse what's happening with rows of characters moving across the screen, moving down the screen, and then from that you get into coordinates and placement and loops to mm-hmm. loops to put the characters in particular places. So you begin to tease out sort of rules around the game from that particular context. So that's a really interesting activity I like to do.
So the rules there actually lead to maybe the pseudocode that you would write to make the game.
That's right. So if you were, often one of the challenges I would set is, here's a game, let's go online somewhere in Miniclip or somewhere and look at a particular game, look at that game playing. Now, let's try and replicate that. I mean, I think there's a kind of parallel here with what we do sometimes with literacy, is that we talk to learners about stories that they know, if we talk about sort of developing creative writing. Mm-hmm. And often what we do is we talk to learners about stories that they know and they understand, and then we ask them to retell that story. So that's kind of just the straight retelling of it. And then we might bring invention into it a little bit. So we ask them to write the same story, but kind of create something new in it. And then they might then go off and write their own story thereafter. So that kind of idea of developing creative writing from narratives that you're familiar with, I think you can actually get a lot of traction with learners when you develop games design and computational thinking from initially from context they're familiar with, so games that they know and understand. You start there, so they understand the rules, they understand how things to go together, and then they can develop those further. So that's the kind of parallel where games design and games that learners know can then develop into their own games and their own things that they develop. And that's really important, that eventually you get to a point where there is invention and creativity, because that's the really exciting thing around computing science, that it's a very creative process, coding and so on.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of questions about what you're just saying. The first one is this idea of computational thinking. Has that always been embedded in computing in schools as a subject in secondary schools?
Really, computational thinking is, I suppose, in all honesty, computational thinking is something that's really relatively new to us as a way of thinking about computing science. Mm. We've really, since the introduction of computing, we've very much been focused on what makes a computer. So the bits and bobs that go into a computer system and software development. How do you write a computer program? And since the late 1980s, when computing science came in, computing came in as a subject, really up to when we began this journey of creating the courses for Curriculum for Excellence, the new national qualifications, all that time we'd been focused on for software development and computer systems, and we'd never really thought in depth about what is it that makes computing uniquely computing. What is it about our subject that isn't to do, I mean, you could, you know, the technology, you can take the technology away and you could still have computational thinking. Because it's a way of understanding how things work. And I think really until the development of the new Curriculum for Excellence qualifications, that's the qualifications that sort of level 3, level 4, 5, higher and advanced higher, until we'd started developing those qualifications, we hadn't really embedded computational thinking into what we were doing. It was something that really began to come on the radar in late 2010, and obviously we'd already produced the experiences and outcomes for broad general education. So it is something that's kind of new, but what I'm really excited about is that there seems now to be some discussion about engaging again with looking at the technology's E's and O's. Mm-hmm. Beginning to review where we are with Curriculum for Excellence and review our experiences and outcomes. And I think what I would very much like to see for computing science is is for us to really focus in on computational thinking within the experiences and outcomes, but retain the novel and interesting context for learning that we have, whether that's multimedia or whether that's games design. Retain those, because I think those give teachers really good ideas. I think we need to focus very much more on what does it mean to break down a problem? How do you understand an algorithm and so on? So I think those are the important things that we need to focus on in our CFE experiences and outcomes.
Yeah, it seems, just from what you're saying, that computing has become a much more interesting subject since the Curriculum for Excellence. I don't know if that makes it easier, but it certainly makes it more interesting.
You see, you're now getting onto my pet subject, which is the quality of our computing science education in schools and the amount of time that computing science teachers have to enthuse young people about their subject. We have a very interesting dilemma in our country. Just in Scotland alone, in the next five years, we're going to need 55,000 IT professionals to replace those people that are leaving posts. That's right across the whole spectrum. So that's something like 11,000 people a year will be leaving posts, and we need or filling new vacancies in the computing and IT sector. That's a huge number of people that we're going to require. And we have a situation very often in our schools where computing science education is being merged into some kind of common ICT experience, kind of the worst of what has happened in the English curriculum. And that is being offered up to our learners in the junior phase of our secondary. So learners in S1 to S3 are being offered this kind of homogenized ICT, which is neither computing science nor business education, but a kind of mishmash of the both. And it's very difficult for computing science educators to really engage with young people and in the sort of projects that would enthuse them about computing science. In that kind of structure, and also in the type of time allocations that they have. So I think we have to really look at what we want to do as a nation in terms of meeting our digital future. We have a significant number of we have a huge need for IT professionals. We have a huge challenge ahead of us, and yet our school system is probably in many respects not meeting the needs that we have.
So our society's needs, yeah.
Our society's needs. And I think we need to reflect on that. I'm very happy that, I mean, one thing, something that I'll share with everyone is that the Scottish Government have begun a really important programme, which is called Plan C, which is Professional Learning and Networking in Computing Science, in computing. This is a nationally funded, Scottish Government funded CPD program for computing science teachers in our secondary schools. And this is a really exciting program. This is just beginning to roll out now. And it's really the first high quality CPD that computing science educators have had in Scotland in the last 20 years. And it's a significant development, and it should very much help improve the knowledge and skills of our computing science educators, because the training that they're now undertaking is talking about not only skills update in terms of the knowledge of programming languages and new technology, but it's also very much focusing on pedagogy, on what are the best approaches for to deliver computing science education. So that's a really interesting. You know, that's a really interesting and very positive development that we've actually got some money from government to develop computing science, and I think that begins to show the commitment that government have. So hopefully we'll then see some change in terms of what our schools
and local authorities.
Yeah.
The other question I had about what you're talking about was, there seems to me to be a real conflict between the demands of this creative curriculum, where kids get time to to explore and develop their own ideas in the way you were describing, and the need in secondary to meet exams and meet the targets for those. There seems to be, you know, there's quite a tension between that. And I've noticed this talking to not just computing teachers but other secondary teachers, is because our schools are to some extent exam driven, then that's what you've got to focus on. And I wonder, is the curriculum for excellence addressing this enough yet?
I think what we've done in the senior phase, where we've reduced the number of subjects in S4, the model tends to be that we've reduced the number of subjects in S4 to 6,
mm-hmm.
from what was previously 8, allows learners to be more focused and to undertake the kind of engaging projects that you would hope that they would be engaged with, things that might take a little bit longer than would have fitted into the previous kind of curriculum model. So I think we've made some improvements there. I think obviously we still have 5 hires, S5, S6. We still have that structure. I'm a big fan of schools that have looked at their S1 to S3 curriculum, their junior phase curriculum, and have gone with offering elective subjects where they've got specialization, where learners can choose to do photography or games design, mm-hmm. or enterprise projects, where there's more they've created capacity in the curriculum to do some sort of different activities rather than just sticking to the subject based model. So I think that's one way that schools can address it, but there's always going to be there is always pressure on schools to deliver on examination results. I think we've maybe made it slightly easier for the schools to engage in their curriculum still and deliver on those results, particularly in the senior phase where they've got 6 subjects in S4 rather than 5. Rather than 8. So that does give people more time, more capacity to engage in activities that they may not have done in the past. But I think there's always going to be that pressure. As long as we have examinations, as long as we have and we increasingly do have a data analysis driven review of subject performance, an analysis on examination performances, and these are important measures. I mean, they are one of a number of measures that you can use. But as long as we have those, yes, the schools will always be under that pressure.
Earlier on, to sort of move on sideways or roundabout, we were talking about primary teachers in particular needing to develop their skills, and you've just talked a wee bit about this. Was it Project C?
Yeah, Plan C.
Plan C. Oh, right, yeah. after Plan B. Plan C. And I know that I've signed up for an event you're involved in running in late October at Glasgow University, which yes. name has, of course, slipped my memory. And I'm hoping you'll refresh me so I know what I'm going to. But so, you can maybe talk a wee bit about this, because it did seem really an effort by people interested in the sorts of computing you're interested in, holding their hand out to primary colleagues and other colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is Computing at School Scotland is an organisation of teachers, FE and HE professionals who are really excited about computing education, computing science. And we had a conference last year hosted by our nice friends Microsoft in Edinburgh, and it was almost 3 times oversubscribed. So we had 100 and something computing teachers and some primary teachers, but just a few, and HE lecturers and so on, came along to this conference, attended hands-on workshops, some discussion groups, and some keynotes for the day. And this year, what we're doing is we've upped the size of the conference quite significantly. And we're hosting it at Glasgow Uni, and it's going to be on October the 26th, and you can sign up on Eventbrite, and I'll tweet the link for that a wee bit later. And it's now this year, what we've done is very much focused on making it an accessible event for all educators. So that's primary and secondary, as well as colleagues in FE and so on. And this event is, there's a 26 different, I think it's 26 different workshop sessions, covering things from scratch to Arduino, robotics building. I'm doing a session there on flipped models of learning for computing science education. We've got Wendy Reith, who is the principal assessor for the new National 5 qualifications, doing a session about those new qualifications, which is very exciting. Plus, we've got a number of keynotes speakers as well that really promise to tell us lots of interesting, exciting things that are happening in computing science. It's a great day, and I do recommend anyone who has a primary experience and is interested in technologies and wants to come along, very welcome to come along. There is a small charge for the day, just obviously because we've got to hire the buildings and the equipment and so on, but it's not too significant, and I think anyone that comes along to the event will get their lunch, and they will have a wine reception at the end, which is always good news.
Yeah, can't say more than that. What I did notice is recently was sent out a list of all the different things on the programme, and yeah, asked to say which ones I would go to. And
yes,
it was really difficult, because I think you'll only end up getting to either four or six. I couldn't work it out. But there was an awful lot of interest from all sorts of angles. Even people who are, you know, say you're in the Arduino, there was hardware stuff, there was software, there was all sorts of things that just looked quite fascinating. And I think anybody interested in ICT in general would get a good glimpse into some of this computational thinking by turning up.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got some absolutely brilliant, workshops. We've got Yan Yao, who's from I think it's Hugh MacDonald, and she's doing a computing science and creativity keynote. We've got Alistair O'Brien, who's coming along to talk about what the computing industry wants from a kind of British Computing Society, BCS perspective. We've got workshops on the Raspberry Pi, on using the Kinect sensor for Xbox with Scratch, developing apps, developing live code, using Lego, we do bricks. I mean, there's heaps of things going on. That I could probably go to every workshop.
Yeah.
Could do it for a week, and I still wouldn't be satisfied. I mean, it's just fantastic, the amount of stuff that's on there. So if people are interested in that, I recommend that they do go along, because it will be a fantastic event.
Yeah, so I say I'm hoping to come off booked up, so I'll be coming along.
Excellent.
Something else happens. It just looks like a good day out, and plenty of fun rather than when there's hands-on things and all the rest of it. Anyway, so I'm trying to think of the next place.
Well, I suppose the next place we could maybe go is, there's a couple of things that I wanted to point people to that I think are really useful for them to have a look at. We were talking briefly earlier, about kind of quality of computing science education and the reasons why we're doing things like Plan C. And there's a great blog post that I think people need to read to understand what some of the problems are that we were then trying to work towards solutions for. There's if you go onto Twitter, and there's a kid called Ross Penman, and he is a kid, but he's a 14-year-old learner in a particular school. I'm not sure what school he's in, but he has his Twitter ID is @PenmanRoss, and he wrote on his blog, and you'll get that blog from his Twitter. He wrote on his blog a fantastic piece about his experience of computing education in school,
mm-hmm.
and it That sums up all that's wrong with computer science education and all the things that it really says, all the things that we're trying to now change about it. So that's an interesting piece for you to have a look at, for people to have a wee look at. And it talks about some of the issues that I was talking about earlier. But another place we're kind of really going is where do our, you know, we've got new national qualifications for computing science and where are those kind of now going to take us. We've got the new National 5 courses that are rolling out just now. People are in the midst of delivering those. And we've also got the kind of the higher courses that are coming. And these are kind of really interesting courses because Curriculum for Excellence has very much put back into computing that scope for creativity. Our previous national qualifications were kind of overloaded with tick boxes about this structure and this thing had to be in. And our new national qualifications are much more open and much that they do very much more allow teachers to be creative with the activities that they engage with learners. So I think that's a really positive and a kind of exciting thing that in our new national curriculum, kind of new national qualifications, we've now got the opportunity to do some of the more interesting, exciting tasks that we wouldn't have maybe been able to engage with before. So we can build, you know, building apps is a real pathway now. So that's another thing that's going to really allow us to engage with learners, building things for Android, using the free Android App Inventor to build Android apps and get kids really interested in that. And there's some great resources for that that have been developed by Jeremy Scott as part of the Jeremy Scott is a computing science teacher from Edinburgh who was seconded to work for the Royal Society of Edinburgh and the British Computing Society. And Jeremy has for the last 2 years, and he's now been extended for a third year, been developing resources to support Curriculum for Excellence for Computing Science Education. And part of that work has been developing resources to support app building and in as part of CFE. And all those resources that Jeremy's built, all the things that he's made, if you Google RSE, I love my smartphone, you will find these resources, which include video tutorials, written worksheets, and so on, that give you a huge head start in terms of actually building apps in the classroom. So that's a really exciting thing that we've not had before, that ability to be sort of really creative in the classroom. We didn't really have it before, and now Curriculum for Excellence has really given that much greater amount of flexibility to us.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought if you were a kid interested in computing, that would be one thing that would really excite you. Can I just, as an aside, mention that Charlie's mentioned a few URLs, and I'm sure he'll send them to me, and I'll put them in the show notes with the archive of this audio over the next couple of days. It's a lot easier to click a link than it is to try and copy it down or get it from audio. Audio is great, but it's not great for passing on links. I did notice that is it Ross Penman on his Twitter account? He says he is a 14-year-old developer available for freelance Rails development in Scotland, which is, you know, quite astonishing.
Yeah, I mean that's great, but we have a huge number of learners that are engaged with digital technologies, whether it's the 8-year-old boy who is building amazing worlds in Minecraft and beginning to engage with some of the coding that you can do in that environment, or whether it's the girl that's building little games and animations in Scratch and sharing with them with our friends. We have these kids are out there, and we really need to engage with them and share what they're doing with others, because it is just I never failed to be amazed with the sort of creativity that young people have when you just give them a little head start with a particular tool or environment, and you give them that assistance and direction just to get them started, and then they're off and they're running, and they get totally immersed in what they're doing. It's this I was kind of reading about this the other day. I was doing some research about sort of kind of computational thinking and about the effect it has on the brain. And there's this state called flow, where you're so engaged in something that you don't notice time passing. I think mountaineers get it when they're climbing something that is at the edge, just at the edge of their ability, and they're absolutely focused and fixed on the task that they have, and they enter this kind of state where you're just, it's utter focus. And you get that with computation and with programming and development, where you're utterly engaged in something and very much focused on it. And that kind of state is really, it's an important thing for our learners, because we always say, oh, they're engaged in technology and they don't notice time's flying, and they're not, you know, other things happen, they're not interested in them. That's part of the psychological process that goes around being very much engaged and interested in something. If you went into a classroom where everybody was kind of in that flow state, it would be a fantastic thing, because the learners would be focused on what they were doing, developing solutions to problems, and really engaged in that creative programming experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think even at a very basic level, you can experience that sort of effect just by trying to solve small problems without having a huge depth. Just on the Minecraft subject, because I think the Consolarium had things in Minecraft, and it's come up quite a few times recently in various education bits and pieces. And I'm wondering, I mean, it's obviously valuable in education, because even if you miss out the computing or the coding, if you're just using basic Minecraft, kids are very engaged with it. It can become a focus for learning. It can become something that the learning surrounds. One of the things I saw recently was kids using it to design parks as part of a storytelling thing that the primary sevens were doing for the primary ones. So it was a whole big topic, and Minecraft was embedded in that. And I've also seen where kids build in Minecraft buildings or something to do with the topic. So if they're doing a topic on a Titanic, they're making a model together and they're doing cooperation and all the rest of it in there. But as a teacher, I find Minecraft, or as an adult, impenetrable. And I've made a fair effort at it. I was doing a sort of online course last summer, the summer before last, that involved was partly set in Minecraft. And all I did really was fall down big holes. And I was astonished how poorly I did. And I just wonder, do you think we can use things that engage children, and the kid children are very fluid at, without being able to have any skilled use of them ourselves?
I think you can. I think you can, if you as a teacher are assisted to have that software available, you can make a choice to have that as to use a particular piece of software, a particular program, as a contextual hub, as that kind of context for learning. So as a teacher, if you take a teacher teaching, you know, if you've got particular boys that aren't engaged with literacy, if you want to engage them in building worlds with Minecraft, and then maybe start to develop writing from those worlds, what's happening in the world, using that as that context, then I think that's a good way to engage with those learners. You yourself probably don't need to understand everything about Minecraft there and then. I think if you show willing and you try, I think you'll learn a lot from your learners. And I think that's okay in some contexts to learn from the kids that you're working with. But I think when we use PowerPoint in the classroom, a piece of software I'd love to see banned, by the way, but if we use PowerPoint in the classroom, you don't understand everything about PowerPoint to use that tool. Equally with something that's a game or another piece of software, you don't have to understand everything of it, but you just need to appreciate its potential, what it could offer. And I think then if your learners then sit down and the learners have some skills with that software, they will do amazing things. And then your skill as a teacher is to take that and translate it into other activity. it's that's where your skill comes from as a teacher. It's about how you encourage, using that context, the learner to then engage with other things. So I think that's where things like Minecraft have an initial traction in terms of a context for learning, for a range of activities. But I think they also do eventually have real power in their own rights, you know, building worlds, starting to engage with coding through that environment, building kind of logical machines in there. I think there's some real scope to do with all those kind of activities as well. And Minecraft is a great hit. It's digital Lego. Kids are just enthused by it.
It just seems incredibly engaging for kids, especially upper primary kids. And very often, in one school I've seen it used, the expert in the class was a girl who had been very subdued, didn't contribute very often. But because they were using Minecraft, she was articulate and confident, came right out of herself because it gave her a sphere where she was an expert. And I think maybe you were talking earlier about we're trying to leverage ICT and there is a nervousness around it if teachers aren't confident. It's maybe not being confident to use the IT, but confident to follow the learners,
yeah,
and just, you know, herd them in if they're starting something too weird in Minecraft. You know, we say, well, talk about that. That's not maybe the greatest thing in the world to do. But again, that's a teaching point. That's having the confidence, not that you're going to be better at the children in using the software, but that you'll be able to help and guide how they use it and what they learn from it, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Just how the learner uses it, what they learn from it, and kind of shaping and exploring the activity. I mean, you don't you can ask kind of questions about what, you know, if a learner's in Minecraft and they're building a world and they're creating a building, you can ask questions about that building. You say, why have you done this? Mm. What is it you're trying to achieve here? Have you thought about X, Y, or Z? So you're stimulating that interaction is really important. Mm. Just asking those kind of key questions, and it's beginning. You know, I think that engagement with things like Minecraft and Scratch and Kodu that can happen in that kind of upper stages primary, even lower stages primary to an extent, that's the beginning of a journey that takes a learner through using the technology, beginning to explore what the technology can produce in a creative sense. Beginning to become involved in coding and understanding how we think about problems, then that starts them on to a progression into computing science education and a full engagement with that kind of creativity. So it's all part of a kind of continuum where learners are exposed to technology and then see its potential, what it can offer them, and then can explore that further.
Talking of the software and its affordances and things, one of the things that pricked my ears up a wee bit recently in Scotland, and I'm sure you, because the conference coming up that they're running a session, is the Live Code application, which is a bit of Scottish software, as yeah. I understand it. And the interesting thing about that is, it's until recently it's been quite an expensive bit of software.
Yeah,
and it's now they've got an open source edition. As long as you're not making money, I think, out of it, you can use that. And it's been taught now in quite a few schools across Scotland. And I wondered if you get anything to say about that, and probably more generally the idea of using open source and that sort of the philosophy that seems to be about sharing things that is apparent in developer communities and things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, Live Code, the kind of Live Code story is a really exciting one, because they had a Kickstarter project last year, and if they reached their total, they would put Live Code into the public domain, continue to develop it from the Kickstarter project, and they would put it out there as an open source project, and they've done that. And in actual fact, percentage-wise, live code is, I think, the second most popular teaching language now across the whole of Scotland.
Yeah.
So on CompEdNet, we did a survey a few months ago, which languages are you using to teach new national qualifications, and live code was the second most popular language. The most popular language was Visual Basic, and that's a legacy statement, because Visual Basic is what we started to teach higher still with new national qualifications in 1999, 2000, and its popularity remains with us because of its legacy. It's a legacy platform.
You've got lots of resources already out there that you can pick up and use, I guess.
That's right. It's not, personally, it's not, Visual Basic is not a language that I would use with learners. It's not what I would use, but live code is, because live code is very much focused on developing mobile, developing for the web. It's a modern language. It's an exciting set of tools, and it's actually quite simple to pick up.
Yeah.
And there's there's a developing set of resources. You're talking about sharing. There are resources online that are developing. There's there's support out there for live code. So I think it's a really positive thing. But this idea of sharing is really, really important. As teachers, we're terrible about sharing. I think it maybe comes from the fact that as teachers, we're always focused on assessment and making judgments, and it's actually, our culture is all about assessment, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because I think as teachers, we're terrible about sharing things, because we ourselves naturally think there's going to be some sort of assessment judgment by other teachers about it.
Yeah.
And so we're scared to share, because we think we do isn't going to be up to the same level as what other. Anybody listening, if you're a teacher, you should share everything you've got. Just about every resource I have ever made is on CompEdNet. I'm developing a set of flip-based learning resources. You can go into YouTube. If you get my YouTube channel, there's the YouTube channel's there, and there's a link to all the resources that I've developed to support National 5, the Information Systems Unit, and so on, that's there. I'm sticking my stuff out there, and some other people are as well. But I think if every teacher in Scotland shared some of the development they were doing with their colleagues, we would have a huge number of resources, and we would also hugely reduce our workload.
Well, I think that's the thing I've always found about giving stuff away, is it usually comes back.
Yeah, people, it does.
I don't, the thing you're frightened about is somebody saying, well, that's not very good. And I don't actually think that happens very often. I think people usually appreciate what you've done, and even if you've done it a way they wouldn't do it, that they still will come back and appreciate that. There's been a few bits of Twitter activity, but Digital Katie's just mentioning that both the CAS Scotland conference and the Nesta UK One Day Digital conference have live code workshops.
I was going to say, just Nesta's One Day Digital is fantastic. Nesta were they've changed their name, but the name came from the National Endowment for Science, Technology and the Arts. And Nesta are a fantastic organisation, a charity, who are very much focused about developing those areas. And they've been very much interested in the past in things like developing games for learning, games-based learning, games design. I've just written they'll be published later this week. There'll be a blog post on the Nesta blog that I've written about computational thinking. I was talking at an event that they had last week in London about games design, games-based learning. And they're very much focused on how can we use technologies, that combination of technologies and the arts, to be really creative. So Nesta is a fantastic organisation. And what they're doing with their one-day digital events is they went out, first of all, and offered events to learners, so that kids across Scotland were going out and getting free training in Lego WeDo or animations or developing things with Python. But Nesta are now going out and saying, teachers, primary, secondary teachers, come along and get a technology experience. And we'll host a day where you can come along and find out more about particular technologies. And so Nesta are rolling those out, and they're fantastic events. And there's a There's one there, I think, One Day Digital on .eventbrite.com, and I think they're rolling out. They've got one in Edinburgh, I think it is, relatively soon. I think it's in November, and that's going to be a fantastic event. And I think if you're a teacher and you've got time to go along to that event, absolutely go along. I think it's on a Saturday as well, which is
It's interesting how many people you get turning up to these things now on Saturdays or during the summer. I know locally where I work, we ran quite a few courses over the summer, day courses, and plenty of teachers gave up their time, gave up their holidays to come along, because it's becoming difficult to get the whole cover thing going for CPD. So there's definitely a kind of appetite for folk to be learning things in their own time, which I think is very positive.
I mean, it's a great way going to these kind of events, and I think the sessions that they're pretty. I think they're pretty low cost actually.
Mm. I think it's a fiver a session, is it, or something? Is that how the Nesta one works?
I think it's a fiver a session, but you know, this is the sort of CPD training that people would pay. You know, your local authority might pay £500 for you to go on one of these courses for a day or a session, a morning session, and so on. I mean, they are fantastic CPD and thoroughly worth it, and a great way of making up your 35 hours. You know?
if you're short.
Not that any teacher should be struggling for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd like to meet the person that's going, oh, I need an extra couple of hours.
But it is a thoroughly valid way of doing some professional development. And I can just say, I know the number of the people that are involved in delivering these sessions, and they are, you know, very, very high quality.
Yeah.
Really recommend it, absolutely.
So, plenty of stuff to look forward to. Charlie, I realise we've now been talking for over an hour for this nominally half hour show, so I just wonder if there's any more things you want to touch on before we sort of wrap it up.
I think we do have a really interesting kind of after school kind of development happening across Scotland now. There's Coda Dojo,
right,
who are running a number of sessions around about sort of Central Belt, running sort of coding experiences for young people. Those are great, and I think if we could see more of those kind of after school clubs, more of that kind of development, that would be really good. Computing at School Scotland is expanding at a rate of knots, and we are launching kind of hubs for Computing at School Scotland. So we've got a hub in Edinburgh, we've got a hub up in Moray, we've got a hub in Aberdeen, and we're looking to develop more hubs in different areas. And that Computing at School Scotland hubs are places where computing teachers, primary and secondary, FE, HE, and industry can get together to sort of chew the fat and work out what we can do to further computing science education. And a hub is a really good thing, because one of the things we were able to put together recently was Google supplied, I don't know if you read this in the press, but Google supplied tens of thousands of Raspberry Pis. And one of the ways those Raspberry Pis was rolled out to children, because they were meant to go to individual kids, was they were rolled out through Computing at School Scotland.
Yeah.
So they went to Computing at School Scotland. They then went to those teachers that thought they had learners that could use those devices, and then they went into the hands of kids. So, you know, that kind of industry engagement is really important, I think, as well for computing science. And if you want to get involved in that, start talking about Computing at School Scotland hub. And if you don't have a hub locally, we can put you in touch. I can put you in touch with the people to make a hub happen. If you've got a few people, you know, you might have a local authority computing science meeting that you have to support computing science. Well, you could turn that into a CAS Scotland hub, and we can help you out with some funding, some support to make that into an organisation, sort of organisational hub, where you've got industry, FE, HE, and educators all together.
That sounds great. I'll certainly pass that on to the computing folk in North Lanarkshire.
Excellent. Yeah.
As I said earlier, Charlie, if you can do the rather mammoth job of sending me any links over the next couple of days, I'd be very grateful, and I'll include them in the show notes with this show. I usually get the audio up. And just before we kind of round up finally, I'll just mention to people a few upcoming things we've got. This Sunday, which is the 20th, on the new sort of Professional Learning for Teachers channel on EduTalk, we've got Eugene Dapper, who'll be talking to David. Next Wednesday is the 23rd, and we've got somebody from Film Club coming, Sarita Puri, I think, of Film Club, coming to talk to us about Film Club in Scotland. After that, we've got Joe Wilson from the SQA, New Ventures in SQA, who has got his finger in quite a lot of interesting pies. And there's a few more after that queued up throughout November and on. So, Charlie, can I just say an immense thank you? I think I could probably just sit and have a yak with you for probably the rest of the night, and you know, a Guinness or something wouldn't go astray at that point. But can I just say, I've had a great time, learned tons of things, thinking lots of different things in new ways. I think that the focus on something that I've certainly sort of been away this computational thinking, but making that apparent in your teaching and learning sounds a really fascinating way to sort of start tackling your approach to bringing computers into all sorts of education. I'm looking forward to the post about that on the other links. So can I just say thank you very much for having a chat here. And you are Charlie_love on Twitter.
Yeah.
Your blog is charlielove.com.
charlielove.org.
Org. Oops.
Whatever you do, don't go to charlielove.com.
Oh.
Don't go there. charlielove.org.
Type. Sorry about that, Charlie. Right, so charlielove.org. Got that now. It just comes up in my browser automatically. I don't think I've ever seen anything on the .com, so I must always go to the right place. But and I say anything else will pile into the show notes. So can I just say thank you very much, Charlie, for being a great guest tonight. And we do hope to drag you back on in the future, possibly to talk about GLO and sort of Scotland as a whole, ICT. At a later date, so I hope sometime in the near future you'll come back.
That would be great, John. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a blast tonight. Thank you.
Good. Okay, I'm just going to hang the phone up now, folks. So good night.